So how many stairs is it again?
334 stairs.
334, yeah. Okay.
But we will stop, don't worry.
For breath.
Yeah.
Good. These are tight, narrow stairs.
You're listening to Crowd Science on the BBC World Service. I'm Caroline Steele, and I'm climbing up a very tall clock.
Break.
With clock mechanic Ian Westworth.
Oh, I need that break. Okay. Oh. Oh, goodness me.
We're trying to make it to the top for 9 a.m. when bells will ring out over London. This show is all about clocks. Thanks to a question from listener Chris from Yorkshire in the north of England. Producer Margaret and I paid him a visit on a particularly cold and rainy Tuesday.
I'm hoping it's going to be really cosy inside. It looks like a cosy house.
Yes, it does.
Hi, are you Chris?
Well, I'm afraid so.
Nice to meet you, I'm Caroline.
Nice and dry.
Yeah, we've got our waterproofs on, so we're not too bad.
Cup of tea or anything?
Oh, yes, please, a cup of tea would be lovely.
Coffee. Do you want us to take our shoes
tea
off
tea would
here?
Be great.
Shoes off?
If you want. Which one's who, then?
I'm Caroline. This is Margaret.
Hello.
How do you do? I'm Chris.
Nice to meet
nice
you, Chris.
Nice to meet you, Chris.
Chris had a question for us that's been bothering him for quite some time.
Quite simply, how did the man who made the first clock know what time to set it?
Yeah, okay. Did they go, right, I'm going to set it for midnight? But then did the idea of midnight even exist when the first clock existed?
I don't know. I know they had water clocks and they had candle clocks and they had sundials. But who decided that, right, it's noon?
Yeah.
Because I've tried it looking up at the sun. How do you know where it's 12 noon or 1 p.m. or 11 p.m.? You can't tell by looking at the sun, or I can't.
And I guess, did the person who set the first clock come up with the idea that this is, say, midnight? Or did that idea already exist and they set it to that
time? I don't know. Yeah. I've never actually thought about that.
It's a good question. I have absolutely no idea what the answer is.
I've asked loads of people.
Has anyone got any theories that stick?
Just before you came, I even went on YouTube and asked what is time. What a mistake.
Did you end up in a bit of a rabbit hole?
I got Einstein's theory loads of times. And then they're saying that this new space telescope has distorted our image of time. Quite complex, isn't it?
So all interesting stuff, but not the answer to your question?
No.
So I think we'll have to find it.
Yep. That's what you claim to do.
Yeah, that's what we claim to do. Let's see if we can deliver.
Chris Ryan, fools, crown science. Go on, I can put it on me tombstone then.
Yeah, what a great credit. So is there anything else you'd like us to find out?
Yeah, if the time set by the first chap is still the time we use today, or has it been changed?
Yeah, did they set it to, I don't know, I'm going to call this 1 o'clock, but 1 o'clock was actually when the sun rose or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know a lot about clocks and time.
I don't know, you mentioned it. Yeah, there's a lot in here.
There is. I don't know how we're going to get this into one show, but I often feel this and we do manage, so it will be okay. But you've asked a broad, broad question.
Yeah, that's it.
Challenge accepted. So, Chris, we're going to try and find out, do we use the same time now as the first ever clock did? Who set that first clock and what time did they set it to? All within 26 minutes and 29 seconds. So, to start, I think we need to take a look at the world's earliest clocks.
So the earliest forms of timekeeping we know of are on a pretty long scale, right? They're not clocks that you use to mark passage through a day, but they're clocks that mark the turning of the year.
Professor of Physics and author of A Brief History of Timekeeping, Chad Orzel.
So, for example, there are things like the most famous is Stonehenge, but there's also the Newgrange Passage Tomb up in Ireland. And these are solstice markers. These are giant stone constructions aligned so that the rising sun on the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, the rising sun passes through a particular alignment of stones. And that tells you unambiguously that we have now reached the shortest day of the year. That's really critical information if you're in an agrarian society, right? If you're dependent on either growing crops or gathering naturally occurring vegetation and wildlife, you need to know, right? We have hit the deepest part of winter. Now days are going to start getting longer. It's going to start getting warmer. We need to prep for spring.
So how long ago was this? Like, when did people first start keeping time?
The oldest clocks that we have examples of are these monumental stone things, and they date back somewhere around 5,000 years. Newgrange is like 3,300 BCE, thereabouts. So these are really, really old. There are sort of ambiguous indications going back even farther than that. There's these bone fragments that are tens of thousands of years old that some people argue have, you know, the phases of the moon marked on them and counted off, indicating that people were keeping track of time even, you know, tens of thousands of years ago. We don't really know if they were doing anything to mark the passage of time through the course of a day on a short scale, because those tend to use things that are very small and more fragile, right? You know, a sundial doesn't need to be a very large thing. And those are, you know, anything that they had in that vein has probably been lost just to the passage of time.
Humans were keeping time in a very different way, using sundials and bones. But were they dividing it up like we do now, into hours, minutes, and seconds?
The 360 degrees in a circle and 60 seconds in an hour are very closely related to each other. And that traces back to the Babylonians, who used a base 60 mathematical system. And they were some of the earliest to really keep careful records of astronomical positions using these numbers that had all these 60s in them. You know, basically everybody since then has been cribbing off the Babylonians. The division of the day into 12 parts and the night into 12 parts goes back thousands of years. And that comes out of these 60s. And also the fact that there's roughly 12 full moons in the course of a year. So it's very natural to divide things up into 12s.
So people have been marking the passing of time for thousands of years. First with bones, then stones, and then, of course, the sundial, which uses a shadow cast by the sun moving across the sky to track time. But that has the obvious flaw of being pretty useless at night. And it's a sundial, not a sun clock.
Now, the first thing that we would call a clock recorded in history is from ancient Egypt. Around 1500 BCE, there's a tomb inscription by a guy bragging that he had invented a way to keep track of the hours of the night when it was dark and you couldn't look at the sun. And it's basically a water clock.
A water clock. Intriguing. How can water tell the time? I felt the need to see this for myself. And luckily, I was able to at the Clockmakers Museum in London with curator of clocks, Anna Rolls.
Okay, so here there's a small copper bowl.
Yeah.
And next to it does describe it as a clock.
Yeah.
How does a bowl tell the time?
Yeah, how does a bowl tell the time? I guess you could say, is it the bowl or is it the water that's telling the time? What happens is this bowl is designed to not tell the time. It's more like a stopwatch. It tells you that a period of time has passed. So the way it works is it's placed on top of a larger body of water. There's a tiny weeny hole in the bottom of it. And of course, what happens when you've got something with a hole in it starts to sink. So the moment that the water gets to the top of the bowl, it's going to sink. And that very precise moment, you can say, right, so many seconds or so many minutes have now passed. It's one form of a water clock or a clepsydra that's been in existence since ancient times. This one's probably quite modern. It was, we think, made in Sri Lanka. Other systems can have lines engraved on the side of them. and they might be filled with water, and then the opposite works in that the hole starts to allow the water to drain out, and so you can see the time intervals passing as the water, sort of the indicator of the water's edge, comes down the side of the bowl. That's another way of working. This particular type is called a sinking bowl clock. I mean, it's quite, you know...
It says what it does on the tin.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a pretty obvious name.
I feel hesitant calling this bowl a clock, because it doesn't really keep time. To me, it's more like a timer. And I guess you could argue the same for plenty of other clocks, like Chinese incense clocks that mark the passage of time as they burn, an hourglass with sand running through it, and actually, can we even call a sundial a clock?
Okay, so what is the difference between a sundial and a clock? The key difference is that one is a time finder and the other is a time keeper. What that means is this: the clock, which is the timekeeper, if it stops, there's no way for you to find the time again. You need the sundial to find the time. The sundial will stop as the sun sets, but the next morning it magically refinds the time for you, because the sun, so long as it's shining, will start displaying the time again. And they're the fundamental difference. One's a keeper, one's a finder.
So the kind of clock listener Chris is interested in is a timekeeper, because he wants to know about the first clock to be set. So I think we're looking for a mechanical clock, because that can be set to a specific time. And luckily, we're 290 steps closer to a very famous one.
Oh, wow, okay, so this is the mechanism room.
Yes, so this is the mechanism room. So this is the Great Clock of Westminster. Yeah, so it's about 160 years old.
The Great Clock of Westminster, which you might know of as Big Ben, used to dictate the time for people all over London.
So they used to have a team of men used to come up every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, put handles on these squares that you just see that are sticking out from the frame, and then spend the rest of the day just winding the handles. Yeah? Used to take them all day.
Ooh, yeah? What a job.
The Victorians used to come up and watch. This used to be good entertainment to watch, you know, people working.
I guess there wasn't TV back then.
No, no, we're talking 160 years ago. But if you come down this end, just to show you how much hard work it used to be, if you see on the floor there, there's indentations.
Are those people's footprints?
They're the footprints where they would have been stood to wind.
Okay, so just for context, we've got a... Is this a stone floor?
Yeah, it's a limestone floor.
Okay, so for context, we've got a limestone floor underneath us, so pretty solid.
Yep.
And people have been sort of working so hard to pull these ton and a quarter weights
yep.
up that there are basically dents in the floor yep. where their feet have pressed into the ground.
All of that hard work for chimes every 15 minutes and bells on the hour itself. You may have heard chimes from the outside of a clock tower. But this is what it sounds like when you're actually inside the clock itself. It's an impressive mechanical clock, but Big Ben is only 181 years old. Listener Chris wants to know about the world's first mechanical clock, so we have to look elsewhere for that. Salisbury Cathedral in England has the oldest mechanical clock that's still working.
Okay, so we are looking at a clock, but to be honest, if you hadn't told me it was a clock, I would have absolutely no idea that that is what it is. There are sort of several rotating gears, I guess, and a long piece of rope which is attached all the way up to the ceiling, and on the end of the rope is a heavy weight, and then there's a second rope and there's an even heavier weight attached to that. So yeah, if I were to see it, I would have guessed this is maybe some kind of mechanical turning system. So go on, tell me a bit about the clock.
Well, my name is Peter, and I'm one of the floor guides at the cathedral. And I get the pleasure of introducing you to the clock, which is the oldest mechanical working clock in the world.
We have an idea about the age of this clock, thanks to a very old rental agreement which spells out that the rent from a local shop in Salisbury was to be used for the clock's upkeep. But this document just shows that the clock existed in 1386. It could be even older. Which is why the clock has been mostly allowed to retire, apart from the occasional demonstration.
So Peter's going to actually make the clock bomb.
What I'm going to do is just unblock it and you'll see the tick-tock motion. If you have any stress in your life, come here very early in the morning and just listen to the tick and the tock. And that, after 5 minutes, you have no stress.
I love how you've said, I'm just going to unblock it. And literally what you've done is taken a wedge that looks like a doorstop out of the clock.
That's exactly what it is.
And now we've got two weights sort of rotating back and forth, making a lovely sound. Where does the energy for this clock come from? Because it's not plugged into the wall.
No, it comes from the raising of the weights, when you wind the weights up. And it's the descending of the weight. And this one, the smaller one, actually is descending as we speak, very, very slowly, and that's providing the power and the energy. It doesn't need to be plugged in. Now, what I'm going to do is be this little pin on the wheel here, and I'm going to open the nag's head manually.
So you're basically cheating and skipping forwards in time.
Basically, yeah. And now what I'm going to do is I will lift the lever up, and it will twist this bar at the back, which is connected to the striking motion. And you will see that lever lift out of its little slot. Okay, so I'm going to do it now.
Okay, I'm ready. Oh, wow, the whole clock is turning so quickly.
So I will... There we go, there's the bell. I'll put it down. Quite a loud bell. So the striking motion is finished. It's gone back into the slot and it's gone to sleep again for another hour. And that's all they needed. They just needed the hours. They never told time like we tell time. We would say the train is at 22 or the bus is at 10 past. They didn't need any of that. Just the hour. And that's all they needed.
And what were they telling people they wanted at that time? Like,
they're basically announcing a service. They had a lot of services in those days, and so they would pick and choose which ones they wanted to go to, but that's basically it. They would just be announcing a service.
You're listening to Crowd Science from the BBC World Service. I'm Caroline Steele, and on this show, we're answering a question from listener Chris, who wants to know, who set the first clock? What time did they set it to? And do we keep the same time today as people did back then? Salisbury Cathedral in England has the oldest mechanical clock that's still working, but it's probably not the first ever mechanical clock to exist. Here's author of A Brief History of Timekeeping, Chad Ordall again.
It's really interesting. We see the first mechanical clocks at around the same time as we see something that you would think would be a lot older, which is a sand glass. The first unambiguous reference we have to one of those is in the early 1300s, and that's about the same time that we start seeing mechanical clocks popping up all over Europe. Interestingly, we don't really know who invented either of these things. There aren't names attached to the invention of the sand glass or to the invention of the first mechanical clocks. They just start showing up.
But there must have been a first person at some point who had the first mechanical clock and set it to a certain time. Do we have any idea what that time might have been?
The time that they were setting mechanical clocks to in the very early days would have been a sundial or some sort of astronomical observation. People were making very careful observations of the positions of the stars and the planets and the moon for thousands of years. And so, you know, use that as a standard of time. The earliest mechanical clocks are really not very good. You would have to sort of reset it on a regular basis to like, okay, well, you know, by the sun, it's actually noon now. So let's get the clock right and then start it up again and keep it going.
So mechanical clocks have been around since the 1300s. And we know the first person to set the first clock would have set it to a time based on a sundial, which relies on the position of the sun in the sky. But who was that? We don't know. Disappointingly, that answer has been lost in time. So Chris, I think it's fair to say you've stumped crowd science. At least partially. But maybe we'll have more luck with the final part of your question. Are we keeping the same time now as we were back then?
So we initially define time in terms of the rotation of the Earth. And then people realize that that's not actually very regular. It speeds up and slows down depending on a number of factors. So then we started looking at the orbital motion of the Earth as a basis. And there's a definition of time in terms of a fraction of a year. That's a little hard to keep track of. So in the 1960s, we moved to this definition of the second in terms of cesium, which is it's 9,192,631,770 oscillations of light that drives an electron in a cesium atom from one particular state to another.
We've changed how we define time. Nowadays, our most accurate clocks aren't based on the rotation of planet Earth, but instead on tiny oscillating atoms. I spoke to someone who has set records for accuracy and precision in his clocks.
My name is Jun Yi. I'm a researcher at an institute called JELA, which is an atomic physics, quantum science research place jointly administered by the National Institute of Standards and Technology and the University of Colorado at Boulder.
June is a world-leading expert in atomic clocks.
You know, most advanced countries have national standards of time based on atomic clocks, and those national standards of time are discussed, and in fact, every country sends data to an international organization called BIPM, where people look at data from different countries' atomic clocks and come up with a paper time that's being distributed worldwide. That's how we control our commerce, communications, navigations, and so on.
Big Ben can be out by about 2 seconds a day, which sounds pretty good to me. But to atomic clocks, that's nothing.
Now, if you're talking about the very best atomic clock based on the so-called optical transitions, the best accuracy of these clocks now is at the scale where over the entire age of the universe, I'm not talking about 100 years, I'm talking about 14 billion years, this clock will not gain or lose 1 second.
That's incredibly impressive, but it also creates a bit of a problem.
The time of the Earth running around the sun is not a constant. So how do you keep track of your astronomical time, suppose? You know, people are comfortable in defining noon as the sun is right above your head. And if you use atomic clock, well, maybe after a few hundred of years, just because Earth is slowing down, and if you use atomic clock, which is supposed to be really accurate, it's not going to change over the 100 years or so, you will see your noon would be at the place where sun is slightly deviated from your head. And some people are very uncomfortable with that.
I think I'm one of the people that would be bothered if the sun isn't directly over my head at midday, because otherwise, what is midday?
Yeah, yes. You know, science and the romance, they sometimes lived perfectly together, and sometimes there's a little tension.
And maybe it's romance that explains why, in an era when incredibly accurate time is at our fingertips, we still felt the need to climb a very tall tower to hear a bell.
We've climbed 334 out of 334 steps, and yet there's still more to go.
They're just
warning you. Ooh. Wow, okay. There is a giant bell here. And you've just handed us some ear defenders. I'm guessing that's because this giant bell that's about a metre away from us is going to be quite loud.
It'll be around 110 plus decibels where you're stood.
Excellent. When should we put our ear defenders on?
If you put them on now.
Okay. Apologies when I start yelling.
It's okay.
Okay. Oh, these are pretty good.
Excellent.
I can't hear much. Wow.
So what I advise you to do is, if you can, if you've got a spare hand, hold on to some of the ironwork.
Could you be able to feel it?
You'll be able to feel the vibration coming down through the ironwork along with the bell itself.
Cool.
20 seconds before it gets loud.
Chris, I think it's fair to say you have stumped us. We've only managed to answer one out of three of your questions, which is arguably a poor performance, but in our defence, a lot of this is probably unknowable. There is no record of who made the first mechanical clock, but we do know that the maker will have used the sun, and my best guess is that it would have been set for midday, when the sun is directly above your head, but that's just because that's what I'd do. We did discover that we don't keep the same time as we did back then, but that's just because we've changed our definitions. 1 second isn't a fraction of the Earth's rotation anymore. Instead, it's 9,192,631,770 oscillations of the cesium atom. And who knows how we'll measure time in the future. But for now, it's 9 a.m. Or it is for me, at least. Which means...
That's it for this episode of Cloud Science. Today's question was from me, Chris Ryan, in the UK. If you have a question for Cloud Science, you should email cloudscience@bbc.co.uk. Today's episode was presented by Caroline Steele and produced by Margaret Cesar Hawkins. Thank you for listening.
Who were the Black 14?
14 football players who were at University of Wyoming in 1969.
14 student athletes who paid a heavy price for planning a show of support against racism.
It hit the campus like wildfire.
Some of them was getting death threats.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service tells their story.
It was a complete surprise that he kicked us off the team.
What are we going to do with our lives? How are we going to get our degrees?
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.